Going Linux, episode 219, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Well, before we get started, Bill, we have a public service announcement. Kevin O'Brien, Publicity Director for the Ohio Linux Fest 2013, has provided us a press release. And the title of the press release is John Mad Dog Hall to Keynote Ohio Linux Fest 2013. Let me just read the press release here. Ohio Linux Fest is very pleased to announce that John Mad Dog Hall will be a keynote speaker at the 2013 event to be held September 13 through 15 at the Greater Columbus Convention Center. John Mad Dog Hall is the Executive Director of Linux International, a worldwide nonprofit association of end users who are dedicated to furthering the acceptance and use of free and open source software. He is the founder of Project Kawa, which uses free software to promote economic opportunities in Brazil. He is also the author of the Linux for Dummies book. Media contact, Kevin O'Brien, publicity director, and you can get to the Ohio Linux Fest website at www.ohiolinux.org. And that's the press release. In addition to Mad Dog, keynote speakers at Ohio Linux Fest include Robin Bergeron, Fedora project leader, Kirk McCusick, BSD file system guru, and Mark Spencer, the creator of the Asterix open source PBX. So it promises to be a great conference, and I'm not going to be able to be there.
Me neither, but I do see they got some heavy hitters. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm hoping they'll have the talks recorded and all that other good stuff so that those of us who can't be there can listen to at least part of it after the fact.
So the guy that the guy that created the Asterix PBX is going to be keynoting. I've been wanting to listen to him. They say between him and Mad Dog, they have some great stories. So
I can imagine.
Yeah, and then you've got Fedora project leader thrown in there too. So that'd be an interesting discussion going on, or should I say discussions. But anyway, how you been, Larry? You have a great week. You've been staying out of trouble, that kind of stuff.
Staying out of trouble, working hard, trying to get episodes together so that we can record them. We're getting there.
Yeah. Well, how
about you?
I've been kind of absent. I've had some family stuff going on, and I was sick, but I think I'm finally get everything beat back down.
And yeah, you still have a little bit of a cold, right?
Yeah, a little bit. But I got one of the last minute things I had to do is I had to throw Sabian 13.08 on my laptop. Apparently my Windows machine decided to die on me in the last minute, and I only had that one disk laying there, and so it's like, I hope this works just 30 minutes before we got started.
This is your nice big beast of a laptop, yeah. Right? And when you're so proud of the super fast one with Windows 8 on it.
Crash. Yeah, no Windows 8 anymore. But I threw Sabian. Thank you guys, because it's working. We had a little drama to get things going, but in less than 45 minutes, I'm up and running with a working system, so I can't complain. And then the other interesting is, did you hear about Steve Ballmer? He's retiring.
Yeah, I heard that. I wonder what that's going to mean for our dear friends at Microsoft. No, I don't care about Steve Ballmer. He can fish all he wants. I don't care. But
Well, I'm sure he'll be just fine. He'll be just fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, just picking at him a little bit. I guess he's been there 13 years, so they haven't been able to kill Linux yet. So I guess we've passed that hurdle. So we're doing good, apparently.
Onward and upward. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into our first voicemail, and it's from Robert, and it's on our Audacity screencasts. So let's give it a listen.
Hi, Larry and Bill. I know it's been a while, and I try not to send y'all too many emails. I left a little message on the Google Plus, but I found it. Screencasts for the Audacity, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to download them, and then just take my time and go through all six of them. But I wonder if they're going to be applicable to, just in case Audacity has a new version that comes out, and is it going to be, I'm going to be able to send you some of the same steps that you give me in those screencast lessons. So, but anyway, hi to everybody there. And, you can always, email me. Keep up the good work, everybody. We'll give you an update, though. I'm using Zorin OS 6.3 as update. I decided to go with that one instead of Ultimate Edition and all the other stuff. It really does all really what I need to do. So everyone take care. Okay? Keep up the good work. Bye.
Okay. So, Robert, thanks very much for that. I'm glad to hear that you have found our Audacity screencasts. And to answer your question on whether or not the older versions still apply, yeah, Audacity hasn't changed much since 2006, I think, since we recorded the original tutorials on Audacity in our screencasts. There may be a few differences. It has developed over the years, but in terms of how you normally use it and its user interface, it's pretty much the same. So I don't think there's really anything that you're missing. And I think it all applies.
Yeah, Audacity hasn't changed that much.
Right.
I mean, like some programs that I've used. Yeah. It's like, where did buttons go?
Right, exactly. Okay. They've just got more plugins and made it easier to use, and it's basically the same. We've been using it for years, and nothing much has changed in the user interface. It just works. The one thing that has changed, though, I will say it's much more stable. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't crash as much. In fact, it has not crashed at all, knock on wood, because we're using it to record this episode.
You just jinxed us, okay?
We were jinxed before we got started.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
For our listeners, we had a little trouble getting things going this episode here. But we resolved that, and it had nothing to do with Audacity. But Audacity has not crashed in years during the recording. Now, during the editing, it crashes still a little bit. But the nice thing they've done is they have this auto recovery feature that restores things. And surprisingly, remembers all your edits right up to the point of when it crashed. I'm always amazed at how well it recovers that. But thank goodness they have that in there.
Well, I did a little bit of a recording with it not too long ago. And I remember when I first got started with it, it would crash, not too often, but you'd expect at least once. And I got through the complete editing and listening, and it never crashed once. So someone's doing some mojo under the hood because it's working.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what it is that makes it crash during the editing process. Sometimes I can get through, several hours of editing without a single crash. And then there are other times when it'll crash every 5 minutes. And I restart my computer or log off and log back in, and something gets reset, and away we go.
Well, I have to say the those Audacity screencasts still apply to even the newest version. So, you know, they're staying with the tried and true. So,
yep.
You know, they've come in handy.
Yeah, you bet.
All right.
All right, we have another voicemail from Robert. This time something went wrong, so let's listen to that.
Hi, Larry and Bill. This is No 9-to-5 Bugger. You could just call me Robert. I don't have to be secretive now. But I wonder if you could tell me what a problem that I had, I have a USB that I wanted to make bootable, but for some reason, odd reason, when I formatted it, I don't know, I must have did it wrong, so it won't, my laptop won't recognize it. And what I mean by that is that I got the UNET booting program. Well, it won't recognize it. I mean, if I go into, you know, the computer and stuff, I'll see the drive, but when I try to open it, which, you know, I had already formatted it, but I think something went wrong somewhere. I tried to send you a picture and through the email, and for some reason that didn't work. I don't know what's going wrong with that, but that's another time. But I just hope that you can help me out. Yeah, I was trying to try out the distro, Puppy Linux distro, and I wanted to see if I can make it bootable or actually, you know, other distros, because I'm kind of like Bill when it comes to distros. I like distro hop. So get back to me. And I like the way the new site looks. Good job. So take care, y'all. Bye bye.
Okay, Robert, after listening to your voicemail, I was wondering maybe the problem could be with the way the BIOS is set up or the new UEFI. Like my machine, it doesn't like UNET booting because of it doesn't have that traditional BIOS. And that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, you have any ideas?
Yeah, I've run into trouble with USB sticks in general. You know, the USB drives are flash drives in particular. Sometimes they're recognized, sometimes they're not. It depends on the drive. So I don't know, maybe that's going on. But if you've reformatted it, sometimes just the act of reformatting it sometimes gets it a little bit corrupted, and you have to go in with gparted or something like that and remove the partition and create a new partition. Thumb drives are just very flaky, I found.
Well, there's another thing that, depending on where you got the UNET booting, you might want to go to the website and get the latest version. Just an idea. Because sometimes they add features or whatever. I haven't used NetBootin but like 3 or 4 times, and I've had different levels of luck with it. I don't know what else to really say. That's, a little more information. I'd be kind of interested to see how this one works. But, you know, there's these flash drives, like you said, are kind of flaky because they're selling them so cheap. So they're not running through a lot of quality tests on these. They're just, you know, here you go. Get it. Here's your $4 USB and hope for the best.
But. Yep. Well, other than that, I'm not sure we have much else to help you with there, Robert. I'm sorry we can't be much more help. Yeah, I hope it has been helpful. But thanks for the comments on the new website. I like the design myself, so that's good.
Yeah, it does look nice. And I can tell you, Robert, I didn't have anything to do with that. He did it all.
Oh, you did the testing. You did the testing.
I wanted it to be like 16 colors with big, you know, with the little email box that pops up with the little hand and says, you know, email me, you know, like the old AOL used to be. Remember those?
The big old
animated GIFs. I wanted the whole site to be nothing but that, but you wouldn't let me have it.
Nope.
So I, okay. Nope.
It was when you asked for the little warning, you know, the little yellow triangle with the construction guy digging the hole, you know, under construction.
We optimized for Netscape.
Yes. Yeah, that was not something I was going to let happen. So, but thanks for your help in testing. Yeah. You tested on a lot of different browsers, and including Netscape, I think. But anyway.
No, that was Safari.
Our next feedback is not exactly a voicemail or an email. It's another exchange on Voxer, this time between Lord Drakenblut and Nightwise and myself on the origins of Lord D's name. So here you go, Bill. This one's for you.
Hey, Larry. Lord Drakenblut. Just heard the episode where you played my comments that Nightwise got me involved in, and I just wanted to let Bill know where the name Lord Drakenblut actually came from. It originally came from a semi-obscure German metal band called Mystic Circle, who put out one album called Drakenblut, which translates to Dragon's Blood. Now, I am someone who has had a fascination with dragons for, since I was about 5. And an ex knew about my love for dragons. She bought me this album. And when she presented me the album, for some reason, she got it into her head to call me to say, my lord, and handed me the CD. And somehow, in the mix of this, the name Lord Drakenblut was born.
Okay, I get to be the pronunciation Nazi. Probably Nazi is not a good word because it is a German word, but there is no K in Drakenblut. It's German. So, since this is one of the languages I speak, it's pronounced Drakenblut. And it's the same as in Holapido. So, Drakenblut. So, just think Dra, Holapido, but without the Holapido. Blut, Drakenblut.
I've actually heard it with that K sound once before by Fab, so that's part of where I'd gotten it from.
Okay, let's see if I can get this anywhere close. Drakenblut. Drakenblut. Nightwise, is that anywhere near what it's supposed to be? I don't know, Bill.
Our next feedback is from the door-to-door geek from the forums at forum.goinglinks.com. All right. I'm getting ready to get taken to task here.
All right.
He said, big colossal fail in my humble opinion, guys. No mention of OwnCloud or OwnCloud Enterprise Edition. The cost is near zero. The install configure is super easy. Clients exist for any and everything. And you as the user enterprise control everything and every connection the software ever makes. And to play with or have a small install costs you as an end user nothing, but your disk space via a pre-configured turnkey Linux appliance. And he gives this, the website at www.turnkeylinux.org/owncloud. I believe it is well worth a mention. In any case, talking about cloud storage, sorry if this come off as harsh, but dang, I am passionate about owning our own data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dor. We focused on the commercial offerings for the first episode because we wanted to give the new user coming over to Linux as many options as possible, and we didn't really think that turning your own cloud would be within someone's ability when they're just starting to learn Linux. So we just wanted to try to offer them the easy route first, and once they got their feet wet and a little more experience, then we could always know, tell them about OwnCloud, but we kind of just have to kind of baby steps in. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, I think it was meant as an introductory episode, and we didn't want to get too deep. And OwnCloud and what was the other one we left out? There was another one we left out. BitTorrent Sync.
BitTorrent Sync, yeah.
Yeah, that was the other thing we left out.
But that's still under heavy beta.
Yeah, it is. But as a matter of fact, Andrew sent us an email and provided us the review that Dor wanted. So let's read his email. He says, "Hi, guys." Hi, Andrew. Hi, Andrew. "I was listening to episode 215, Cloud Storage, and couldn't help wondering, what about BitTorrent Sync? I first heard about it a few weeks ago on the Linux Action Show and more recently on Linux Basement. I gave it a go myself and find it to be a very neat system. Although you cannot share to it like you can with Dropbox and Ubuntu One, yet it has a number of advantages. One, no server. Unlike most sync services, there is no server. This may be a problem if you use the web access feature to access files. If not, then there is no central server where your files are stored on equipment owned and controlled by someone else. This is a good security feature, as well as knowing if the server is turned off, you still have access to your stuff. Two, peer-to-peer. It syncs directly between linked devices. You have more control over what devices get what folders synced, as well as controlling who else gets access key. No need to share an account with someone else. 3. Instant. Because it uses the torrent transfer protocol, you don't have to wait until the server is synced before the other devices can start to sync. As soon as you start to copy a file into the sync folder, it starts to sync directly to all other devices straight away. 4. Keep it in the LAN. Being peer-to-peer, if all your devices are on the same local area network, then they will sync directly without having to go to the internet. A good security feature, as well as not chewing up your service provider bandwidth and meterage. 5. Infinite file size. Almost. Since there are no server-imposed limitations, your sync folder size and individual file sizes and types are only limited by the devices you sync to. Therefore, if you have a disk with 3 terabytes of space, you can store and sync up to 3 terabytes of data, with the file size limited by the file system type you use. If you have a phone with 16 gigabytes of space, then you can sync up to 16 gigabytes. 6. You set the limits. You can sync as many folders as you wish with as many people and devices as you wish. Choose who and what gets read-write access, as well as who and what gets read-only access. You can even make time-expired keys for once-only access. 7. Encryption. We have all heard about Dropbox not being as secure as we would like it to be. BitTorrent Sync sends data encrypted, and then files are only stored on the devices you permit. No server. Take that, NSA. 8. Cross-platform. The supported platforms are growing as fast as the built-in features. Most platforms are supported, Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android, and the rest are in development, including iOS. I have no worries with my Ubuntu desktop and Android phone. Personally, I am in the process of changing the way I keep my files synced. I will be using BitTorrent Sync to keep my devices in sync and use Ubuntu One to store files I need to have publicly accessible. For example, files made public or files I need to access via the web interface. Happy syncing, Andrew in Perth, Australia." Of course, he provides a link to BitTorrent Sync that we will have in the show notes.
Yeah, that's a lot of information.
All right. Yeah, that was a long one, and it was a good one. So thanks for that review of BitTorrent Sync, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. That was very helpful. Our next feedback comes from David in Israel, who waited several months for part 2, but his timing is perfect for us. He wrote, "Hi, Larry." "Hi, Bill."
"Hi, David."
"Hi, David. Here's part 2 about that software I wrote to you about in April that Bill may wish to try on our behalf, i.e., I'm too much of a coward to try it yet. It is now beta. L, and he gives the link for the BitTorrent sync, and it'll be in our show notes. He writes, this may be an alternative to using a cloud service as discussed in your last show. Speaking of your last show, you may remember years and years ago, I wrote you about how I was and still am using Dropbox to keep my secure stuff, financial data, password files, personal records, etc. You may wish to mention it again as a follow-up on your last episode. I use TrueCrypt to secure a folder on my Linux PC holding my personal data stored inside my Dropbox folder. This, whenever I update any file in the folder, accessing it via TrueCrypt or something similar, it is then backed up on Dropbox. I can then also access it from other computers. TrueCrypt is multi-platform. One twist that I now have via my Android phone is that by using Folder Sync in the Android Play Store, I automatically update my Android phone SD card with the contents of my Dropbox, so I also have a physical backup using EDS Lite also in the Play Store. I can even open up my TrueCrypt folder on my phone. Again, thank you both for all the hard work you put into helping your listeners to get things done using Linux. It is much appreciated. P.S. I should have mentioned that the TrueCrypt folder is like a removable drive to Linux and should be relatively small as it is just a simple file once encrypted. Therefore, any minor change to the file within the folder results in the whole folder being uploaded to Dropbox. As always, I wish you my very bestest, Dave, the expat Canadian in Israel.
Thanks for that, David.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, very good. All right, next, Gus. He added another comment on listener Nancy's comments on wanting some reasons to use Linux. You knew this was coming, right?
Oh, I did. I knew it. Nancy.
Yeah, you started something here. But it's good.
Me?
It's good. No, Nancy did. Yeah. All right.
I didn't do it.
Here we go. Let's read Gus's email. With regards to the kerfuffle over Nancy's comments, I have a few comments of my own. Listener Dave pointed out that no open source software replaces Quicken in terms of functionality. And while that may be true, I find those kinds of remarks to be a great example of looking a gift horse in the mouth. The fact that you can use all the software you want without restrictions for little or no cost is a tremendous gift, and to criticize it for what it's not and to compare it to the software of large corporations is coming at it from the wrong perspective entirely. Linux software is far better in many cases than its Windows or Mac counterparts. What people seem to forget is that free is a feature in and of itself. The fact that so many talented people put their hearts and souls into developing great software for free is amazing, and so I find that over-criticizing Linux software is off base. When I hear people talk about how the Mac or Windows has better this or that, I usually respond that oftentimes the problem is not the tool's fault, it's the fault of the user. Looking at the movies made by the Blender Foundation, you can see high-quality productions that rival some large studios. A movie made with free software that may not have every bell and whistle can be infinitely better than Joe Schmo with his Mac Pro and his Adobe Creative Suite. When people let go of the idea that you get what you pay for and realize what a gift free software is, putting up with the little things becomes bearable. Nightwise says that you should use whatever works for you, and I understand where he's coming from. But that attitude can also hold people back from changing from antiquated Windows shareware to a free and open alternative. Many of the, quote, problems people face with free software are merely them projecting their biases onto new programs. Different does not make it worse. Dave might have a point about Quicken, but I think that people need to remember that this software is free and that there are talented people who are trying to make the best experience they can provide without restrictions. Criticism can be helpful, but we need to remember that there, more often than not these days, are projects by a bunch of volunteers and are projects years younger than a project like Quicken. If Quicken didn't feel a little more polished than a younger free program, I would be surprised. Okay, Gus. Thanks for that input.
Thanks, Gus. He does have a unique viewpoint, and he made some good points. Mm-hmm. He did. Our last feedback come from Dave, who has a topic suggestion for our podcast. He wrote, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave. "Just a thought. How about an intro and advanced show on what to do when Linux doesn't work? Initially, I had desktop crashes with my Kubuntu install that were fixed with the proper graphics driver install, but took a bit of learning and reading to figure out. Also, one of the drawbacks I found running Linux from an external hard drive is do not bump the cable. I look forward to having the time to clean up my laptop drive and do a permanent install. So maybe a show on what to do when Linux becomes unresponsive. The screen goes black or things keep crashing. What to do when you see kernel panics appear on the screen. The proper way to shut down in emergencies. What logs to look at and where to diagnose problems. Maybe even an SSH tutorial for the advanced show. Keep up the great work. P.S. Thanks for the link to the Code Academy on your site. I thought it was there on your site before. I didn't see it now, though. I started a few days back with hopes of creating a web page eventually, and I'm loving Code Academy. Also, I downloaded the Maker after seeing the link on your new site design. The timing was perfect, Dave." Yes, Dave, Larry's an overachiever. That his thing came out really well. I went and doing the Code Academy for learn how to write HTML, and my little stuff doesn't look anywhere as good as yours, Larry.
Well, I had a lot of help from the Maker software. So,
was the Maker? It was in our the repositories?
No. I found it through Floss Weekly. They had an interview of the developers, and it is you need to go to our link, and I think I mentioned it on the last episode of the Going Linux podcast. I had a review of website editors while you were out, Bill, and I mentioned the Maker and where to get it. Go to that link, and you can download the Linux version. It is website editing software that's primarily or initially designed for the Mac operating system, and then they follow up with versions for Windows and Linux, but they focus on the Mac. But the Linux version, I think, is one version behind the Mac version. Completely functional. It doesn't have some of the graphics on the buttons, but other than that, I don't see too much difference between the two versions in terms of their functionality. There is some difference, but and for the Linux version, you need to download and compile the software. So if you're if you're adverse to compiling, which really doesn't take all that much work, quite frankly,
it's not scary as you thought.
No, it's not scary at all. I've compiled software in the past, and I don't know what people have problems with it. It's just it just sounds scary. That's all. But anyway, the Mac version they sell. They sell it on the iTunes Store, of course. If you want it for free, you can get it for free from their website. And the Windows version, they have an installer, of course, there as well. But anyway, it's the Linux version is available there for free if you download it and compile it yourself.
Okay, so where would someone find out how to compile? Is there a website that you use that can get them started?
There are plenty of just Google for compile Linux software. And go into your community pages for your distribution. They'll have discussions on that as well, if not articles. And it's all in the instructions from the Maker. So you read the README file, and it gives you the step-by-step instructions. And if you didn't know you were compiling software and you just followed those steps, you'd do it, and you wouldn't even know that you were compiling. I mean, it just leads you through it quite nicely.
Now, I don't think I can read a manual now. Come on, can you just give me the Cliff Notes version of that?
Sure. Okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to have to try that Maker, because I was really impressed how the site come out.
Yep.
How long did it take you, just before we end this discussion, how long did it take you to, from like start to completion?
Oh, it probably took several weeks because the previous design, it's not because there's anything wrong with the maker that would cause it to do that, but my previous design, each page was hand-coded. And so all of the navigation bar and everything was on each individual page. And that's one of the things I wanted to get away from. And by having software like the Maker manage the navigation bar and the graphics and the footer and the header for me, whenever I have something new to post, I just focus on the content as opposed to everything else. So it was just migrating each and every page over, and I'm not finished yet. It took a while, and there's still more to be done. So we'll get the rest of the pages done as time allows. But I got most of the pages done. The main pages are all done. All of the recent articles within the past 2 years have been converted over. And the show notes page has all the show notes, but it may link to some of the older pages that'll still show up with their old design.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so last two things we have. We have a Gone Linux story from Andrew and a new segment. So let's read the Gone Linux story first. So Andrew wrote about Nancy Gate. He says, "Hi again, guys. After listening to episode 216, listener feedback, I got to thinking about Nightwise's rebuttal on the Nancy Gate saga. I thought about my reasons for switching to Linux, and I thought I'd share. I once ran Windows XP on my desktop machine, and like most, I kept going because it was one of the best incarnations of the platform. Despite the joke, XP equals extra problems. Vista still gives me the runs even today, and I cannot bring myself to pay for Windows 7 just to have a current operating system. So after life events reminded me about Linux, I did some Googling and found it was more than the project I heard about in the early 90s and thought, why pay for Windows 7 when I can use this for free? So on went Linux in dual boot config, and now, 2 years later, I don't even have Windows installed anymore. Also, in regards to my laptop, most would agree that unlike a desktop, laptops are only upgradable so far. My 2004 Toshiba Tekra A4, with its lonely Centrino single-core processor, originally outfitted with XP, is no match for Windows 7 and definitely not Windows 8. Essentially, Microsoft is deciding my laptop is not worth their effort and are, by proxy, forcing me to buy a new one. Why should I? It still works fine, if just slower due to XP becoming bloated with service patches, etc. over the years. A fresh install of Linux Mint with XFCE desktop has put a breath of life into my laptop. I know Nancy has some specific requirements, for example, Quicken. I sometimes run Windows in a virtual machine whenever I need to run specific tools and cannot be bothered tinkering with Wine. I also need Windows to play Worms on Facebook due to a quirk with Flash. There's a reason to use Windows. All other games work fine. It's just that one. Otherwise, I live my life on Ubuntu, and I even like Unity. Please don't shoot me. Keep the shows coming, Andrew, in Perth, Australia. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Andrew. That was a good one.
Yep.
Our next segment is called Linux in the Wild, and Charles wrote in, and he said, "Hi, Larry and Bill."
Hi, Charles.
Hey, Charles. My wife and I went to the top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire yesterday. When we were visiting the observatory at the summit, we noticed that one of the screens was showing a Welcome to Opera message, along with a large Fedora Core logo. Since the top of Mount Washington is socked in most of the time, this is an instance of Linux in the clouds. That's all for Linux in the Wild for August 2013. Charles in New Jersey.
Well, I think we have a new segment. So if you have a sighting of Linux in the Wild, leave it on our Google Plus page, in our forums, on our voicemail, or in an email. If you have a link to a pic, an article, or whatever, include it. We like to share. So, what do you think? New segment?
Yeah, I like that segment.
Yeah, Linux in the Wild. Good.
Yeah, Linux in the Wild, because when you spot those mail machines, telephones, copiers, or
toasters,
we want to know about it.
Yes.
Yeah, we want to see how many of these, how many things that Linux actually runs, controls, and we use every day to make our life better. So start sending them in.
Yep, sounds good. All right, I think we should wrap it up, Bill. Our next episode is Computer America number 66. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com, the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done. If you want to support our efforts, please click the donate button while you're there on the site.
You can download episodes directly from our website, or you can play them right from the show notes page. Or better still, go to subscribe.goinglinux.com to learn how to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.
Send us your feedback. We'll play your audio files or voicemail messages on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail is 1-904-468-7889.
And remember to leave your topic suggestion on our forums at forum.goinglinux.com or participate in our Google Plus community. Look for Going Linux Podcast.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.